and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco, sports director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clements, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their communities dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
The Packers shut down the Steelers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Pittsburgh, where the Packers beat the Steelers 35-25. Green Bay fell behind 16-7 at the half. Quarterback Jordan Love.
You know, when we came in the locker room at halftime, you know, the message was that we just weren't finishing. We weren't executing our plays and we weren't locked in on doing the everybody's 111. So, you know, there's plays to be made, and I think we just weren't executing those and we weren't able to stay on the field. So, you know, I think the first half went by really fast for us as an offense. We had one scoring drive. And so I think the message was just do your job, lock in, and execute.
At one point, Love had completed 20 consecutive passes. Aaron Rodgers on why the Steelers' offense stalled in the second half.
Yeah, we had too many penalties, too many negative yardage plays, and then I wasn't accurate enough on third down, and we weren't creating enough space. But we'll look at the film, and you know, we'll get better, and we got a good team coming in next week.
NBA. The Bucks with a loss on the road to the Cavaliers, 118-113, despite Giannis with 40 points. With sports, on Mike Clemens.
Skilled trade workers are the backbone of every community and also the Army National Guard. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and in every other trade needed to accomplish the mission. These soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Covering the games and biggest sports news, listen daily to Mike Clemens on Civic Media.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Oh, what an interesting weekend I had. Recently, my daughter informed me that she and her boyfriend are moving from here in central Pennsylvania to the West Coast. And we're going to do that sometime in February. So it's left me in kind of a weird position that's brought me to today's topic. Several years back, we bought a house for our daughter to live in because, one, rents were crazy, just through the roof. There was no way she'd be able to afford the rents. And two, as someone who, as a child, flirted with homelessness a number of times, I did not want my child to ever have to worry about where they laid their head at night. So we bought a house and she rented it from us. And, you know, it's worked out the way I wanted to. Yeah, I slept well at night. Now they're going to move to the West Coast and I'm now stuck with a house I don't really want. And the prospect of selling it. And the part that's brought me to where I'm at is I went on one of those websites to go, hey, you know, how much is this worth? Fell down the rabbit hole of, hey, you know, do you want to sell? And it's thrown me on a list for the vultures to come swooping in with offers of, we'll buy your house. And you find out that they're all backed, you know, by these big LLCs, these big corporations with vulture capital money who want to buy up all the rental properties. And I'm not surprised. You know, this is their business. But I also happened to come across a report from the Rutgers Policy Lab that investigated corporate landlords in New Jersey. And they looked at the 1-4 unit residential property market. And what they found is that since 2012, corporate investors have gone hog wild in buying up rental properties in a number of cities like Trenton and Newark, Camden, a number of the shore communities, places where high numbers of renters, places that tended to be a little bit older, a little denser, again, the stronger rental markets. And, you know, from a business perspective, the places you want to get your hands on. And what they've also found out is that because of consolidation, what had been small and local landowners are turning into big national landowners, you know, homeowners. And of course, you know, the rates are going up, and we really wonder why rents have gone out of control. And in this study, you know, they pointed out, like in Trenton, like it's almost 20% of the homes that they're in the market are not corporate owned. You know, they looked at Newark that, you know, saw almost 11% of the local stock being controlled by corporate interest, by big, not the small local guy who owns maybe 1, 10, maybe even 20 properties. No, these are the big boys. These are the vulture capitalists who've got Wall Street money. And it got me thinking about an interview I saw with a baseball player who bragged that he has 150,000 doorknobs. They aren't even houses. They're doorknobs that are paying him rent every month. And the study also found that, you know, surprise, it's usually poor neighborhoods that get bought up, not the affluent suburbs. And you go, gee, do you think that they would allow that in the affluent suburbs? No, of course not. But understand, this kind of corporate ownership of housing is pure and simple a direct assault on the working class, and really an end to the American dream of having your own safe, stable housing. You've got these private equity giants, these billionaire-backed corporations, buying up neighborhoods. Places like, you know, the place that I bought for my daughter. And look, you know, I understand, you know, it's easy. You know, we'll come in, we'll take care of everything. We'll write you a check, you'll have it one day. You don't have to go through all of the, and I get it. But I'm sitting here going, do I go the easy route of corporate ownership and know that that house that I am now selling will never be in the hands of someone living, of starting their life in that home as theirs? Or is it really all about the money? Do I just pass it off to a corporation and they're just going to fleece the next tenant to where, you know, no one ever owns it? They just keep handing off profit. And this is a weird position to be in. And it's one of those that, as a working class person who never thought I'd own a home, let alone two, I'm just sitting here going, I'm in a privileged position, but I also don't want to be part of the corporatization of housing. I want to be in the position where we're pushing to undo some of this damage. This report from the Rutgers Policy Lab, you know, they're saying that we need to have stronger protections for tenants. They need to promote moderate income home ownership. There needs to be an expansion of monitoring as these big corporations take over the New Jersey housing market. And I go, federally, we should be doing the same thing. Should there be controls on how much we allow corporate America to monopolize neighborhoods? Are we okay with the future of everything being rental? You own nothing as a citizen anymore. And I can see it coming back. You know, we lived through, I didn't, but my great-grandparents did, lived through a generation of company towns where the robber barons owned everything. And look, we're in a moment of inequality that dwarfs what it used to be. the push towards digital currency, the push towards renting everything. My kids say that they believe in their lifetime they won't have to buy a car. They'll just lease it. They'll rent it for a day or a week or a month or whatever. What's being fed to the younger generation is this kind of corporate servitude, to where it really is all about your entire life paying rents to the owners, whether it's your cell phone, your rent, your electric bill, whatever it is, your car, whatever. You're constantly feeding the wealthy, and you never get to own anything. Or is it, or am I just old and I haven't bought into the new world order? I want to hear thoughts, because I'm a little weirded out, and I'm not sure where I'm going with this. I seriously do not want to sell to a big corporation. I would love a young family to be able to start their lives in that home and be able to grow and to build like all of us had a chance to do. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Tell me what you think. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mateus Vernango, professor of economics at Bucknell, is going to be here to share some of his thoughts. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said, look, got this house that I bought for my daughter. We're probably going to be selling it here very soon. And the vultures, they're biting. And it's one of those things that like I said a moment ago, I definitely don't want to sell it to one of these vulture capital groups. And look, they're not offering, you know, crazy money, but it's still, you know, it's tempting. But you know, the sad reality is, as they're buying this stuff up, working people will never get a chance to buy homes, and it's quite frightening. And here to share some thoughts on where we are, and maybe pull me back a little bit from the edge of despair on this issue, I've asked my good friend Mateus Vernango to come share some thoughts. He's an economics professor there at Bucknell University, my go-to economics guy. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Rick.
So, you know, again, I look at this New Jersey study that we just talked about a second ago, and the fact that you got these big vulture capital groups, these LLCs, who are buying up all of the, as I think Alex Rodriguez, the baseball player, claimed he owned 150,000 doorknobs. They're not even houses or residents. They're just doorknobs. It's bad for people, which is why rents, I think, are skyrocketing. And sadly, our government's done very little to help in this.
Yes, it's true. You know, it's well known that hedge funds have become large landowners, you know, in not landowners, you know, homeowners in the United States, that they manage large portions of, you know, of the stock of houses in the United States. That is a dangerous precedent. The most obvious sort of problem with that is that traditionally for the middle class, the buying of the house was the sort of main savings and the basis for their ability to save for later in life. And so that was the main asset. A lot of the credit was built around home ownership. So all of those are, you know, dangerous sort of trends because they suggest again that future generations and, you know, younger generations already that are already in, you know, in the labor market won't have the same opportunities that their parents and their grandparents had. So that's a further sign of the decline of the working class in the United States.
Yeah, but we're told we're a capitalist country, and this is what capitalists do, Mateus. This is what they do. This is just, you know, money, you know, going after the best investment.
So, you know, slumlords existed, in the past. Trump's dad was a slumlord. Trump was somewhat of a slumlord, moved from Queens to Manhattan. But, you know, nonetheless, that's his origins. I think that the idea that capitalism is about the profit motive and accumulation, you know, does not necessarily mean that you have to, you know, that it has to be predatory capitalism, that it has to be without guaranteeing a minimum of, you know, modicum of welfare to working class. In fact, it's something that it should be said, it's dangerous for this kind of capitalism that it's more prone to, you know, significant crisis. So I you know, sort of fear what happens in a system in which everybody depends on private hedge funds for their own living, you know, for their housing. So I should say this, in a society that one of the shocking aspects of the transition to becoming American and living in this society is the number of people that are homeless in large American, you know, so we already have a problem, not just how many people, you know, the affordability, how many people cannot afford to live in many places. I think a testament of this is the strength of the candidacy of Mamdani in New York, that has become sort of a central issue of the campaign, and that people are willing to vote for a socialist. There, you know, this might be a capitalist country, but people in New York are looking for a socialist, a democratic socialist, to get some affordability.
And, you know, for me, I look at the fact that we have done virtually nothing to increase the stock of housing. In fact, you know, when Kamala Harris was running, she ran on this idea that we're going to give, you know, $25,000 to first-time home buyers. You go, okay, that's all that's going to do is raise the cost of the first-time home buyers because prices are going to go up. Why didn't she run on an idea of we're going to build 3 million houses and we're going to sell them at cost, or who knows what kind of an idea to increase the stock instead of, you know, just making the ones that are available much more valuable for the people who already control them, which are the vulture capitalists who have raised the rates through the roof. And look, they're not investing in more because the shortage gives them the ability to say, supply and demand, economics professor told you, supply and demand, we have to charge because there isn't such a good demand. It's heads they win, tails we lose.
I agree. I think that there should be programs to build. I think that, you know, there should be innovative ideas in that respect. But I think also we should regulate. There is, you know, on the ability of companies to go out and buy, you know, it's financial speculation. They're not interested in the, you know, in the housing market because they, you know, think that in the long run, you know, it's not a business in the sense that they're not running this housing projects because they, you know, are interested in making reasonable profits out of, you know, a service that, you know, it's needed. You know, you have to, you know, you may very well have a home that you rent and get some sort of income. This is speculation on the idea that the prices of houses will sort of go up and in certain places. So they're not building significant amounts of houses in Montana. So this is, you know, for a reason they're hedge funds. This is Wall Street. This is speculation. This is the same as crypto. This is the logic of this thing.
So, before I let you go,
we can regulate them. Sorry.
Right. Before I let you off that point, though, because, you know, this started after the housing collapse in 2009. So to me, this is the next, you know, they got us into all of this trouble by speculating on the housing bubble. They created this. They made loans to people that, you know, clearly were never going to be able to afford them, so they could prop up the prices and all that, knowing that they were going to get these houses back. They collapsed the economy. We bailed them out, and they took the money that we bailed them out with, and they bought the houses back at dirt cheap rates and are renting them back to us. This is classic.
At very high rates. And I should say, one of the things that have kept inflation, in spite of all the discussions of tariffs, this, that, and the other, it's rent prices. So that's one of the things that has kept prices relatively high. And here the Fed has not helped, because interest rate being high, it pushes also mortgage rates and it pushes rental houses, you know, of houses. So all of that, so they're profiting, you know, with the crisis, and they're profited out of the crisis. So you're absolutely right. And there should be limits of, you know, on the ability of these corporations to buy houses, and, you know, and what slum lords, you know, the modern version of slum lords are capable of doing. So I think we should be way more aggressive on our regulation of the housing market. And, you know, with the concern of guaranteeing affordable housing for everybody. This should be, if you go back to FDR's Four Freedoms, yep. You know, this should be up there on the list of priorities for any sort of progressive, party. And, you know, so the Democratic Party should take, or at least, you know, the progressives within the party, the banner that we have to provide affordable housing.
Now, does any of this fall under antitrust, or is this something that those laws never imagined? Because you're basically monopolizing rental properties. It used to be, you know, a guy owned maybe 4, 5, 10 rental properties, and that was that's where he made his income and made his fortune. Look, you know, there are a lot of, you know, small slumlords around. This is corporatizing. This is taking, you know, big money that they borrowed from us to buy our homes and jack up the rates. It's really if you can get it, it's really an amazing scheme of us buying them homes and paying for them while us falling further and further behind and virtually getting nothing in return.
Yes, no, I don't disagree. I think there should be, you know, if there isn't some connection with antitrust law, it's not my specialty, I should say. So I don't know how large these things are. I suspect that they are not as large as, say, ever the big three were, you know, in the auto industry, or as Apple is in, you know, or Google in, you know, in the search engine industry,
or Amazon,
So my guess is that they're not as big. The thing that I think is they're more insidious, because they are in your housing market, they are in the crypto, they're in everything. So the financial sector, these hedge funds are large and humongous, and they're in every single place, and they're actually running also the government, because they are, you know, the Treasury Secretary comes from the bowels of that, and you know, and so on and so forth. So they do manage monetary policy, because the people that sit at the, you know, the table to make decisions on monetary policy are people that come from Wall Street, and those that decide on the bailouts are people that come from this hedge fund. So it's a rotating door, and so on and so forth. So I think there is a case to be made. I don't know. The issue here is, of course, to what extent there is political will to do these things. The funny thing is, I wrote a paper a few years back exactly on this. I think we have had a pendulum that goes back and forth on society's willingness to accept that we should intervene in markets when monopolies get too strong. I think that over the last 20 years or so, the pendulum in society has moved again to the notion that corporations are too powerful. I remember when I wrote that, it was at the time that Elizabeth Warren had just started and pushed the Obama administration to create the consumer, you know,
Financial Protection Bureau. Yeah.
Bureau, which is being eviscerated as we speak, has been eviscerated by Doge. The funny thing is that even though that was there, and Biden had, Lina Khan was a very strong, you know, sort of commissioner that was trying to do something on antitrust, I think that battle has been lost to some extent at the government level, at the administration level. And we are going in the other direction, not just with respect to, housing is, I think, something that they're going to try to deregulate even more, but it's not heavily regulated in most places. But you know, crypto, he just not only it's complete deregulation, but he just freed one of the sort of people involved in fraudulent cases with cryptocurrency. So I think we have lost for some reason, you know, even though I think the there is a consensus that monopolies are too powerful, we have lost the policy battle.
No, and you know, the sad reality in this, and this is where part of this I wanted to talk to you about, is that this is just one part of where I sadly see us returning to the past, or going back to the future, if you will. You know, I talk about on the show about company towns of the past and corporate script and where we came from as a working class, being under the thumb of the boss, you know, the coal barons, the steel mills, those folks. And I see us going in that direction, just in a high tech digital form, whether it's, you know, rents owned by Blackstone or these big LLCs, or a digital currency that now we're only going to pay you in this digital currency. And oh, by the way, you can only use it at, let's say, Amazon. You know, I'm you get your groceries from Amazon, you get everything. I see us going back to that. And I know the history of where we were.
Privatization of public spaces.
Right. And that's the frustrating part. Do you share my concern on this?
Oh, I think totally. I think that's the story of the last 50 years. I mean, that's a great extent what has been going on. I should say, on the cryptocurrency and the move to private scripts, although I think that may not happen anytime soon, I think that you're right that there is a tendency in that direction. The book on this was written by Friedrich Hayek, you know, in the 1970s. So there has been sort of a long tendency of us moving in the direction of, you know, socialism for corporations and you know, harsh capitalism for working class people.
No, so, perfect example is the, you know, HUD. HUD is one of the biggest funders of these corporate criminals, of these groups. They're not criminals yet. They should be. But you know how much tax dollars goes into these raising rents. I mean, that's the weird part of all of this, that we do give them all this welfare and they're always okay. The sad reality is it's so many working people who get the screw job in this. So I want to end this on something, you know, maybe positive, because I don't want everyone going, oh, it's all over. We're heading to you know where. Is there a way, do you see out of this? Is there a way to, as you said, regulate some of this? Do you think this is a political will that has to come from the bottom up? What do you think?
I think the positive stuff is that at the end of the day, socialism, when you speak with people, you know, not necessarily, you know, socialist, you know, the young socialist, you know, democratic socialist, you can talk with, you know, redhead MAGA people. And there is a sense that they think corporations are too powerful. There is a sense that, you know, they're being, screwed in the process and that something has to be done. I think there is space for building coalitions that are encompassing and allowed to win elections and allowing us to regulate a good chunk of financial markets.
Yeah. Maybe talk to a farmer.
Yes. So I think that those things are possible. The question is, you know, you need an organized party to do that. And, you know, that's the old joke of, you know, that,
Will Rogers.
I'm not part of any organized, you know, movement. I'm a Democrat.
Right.
So that's why I'm fearful. I should say that I don't want to be the party pooper here, but the thing that concerns me that nobody's talking is, you know, Bannon gave an interview to The Economist, you know, the editor of The Economist, in which he talked explicitly about Trump running in 2028. And I think that, you know, I mean, there's no guarantee of what will happen in 2028, but clearly they're signaling that he's going to run again, that he's going to try to have a third mandate, even though they cannot get a constitutional mandate for that. They're not going to be able to do it, you know, an amendment or something like that. So there are many issues that divide the working class. And I'm fearful how, even though we are in agreement, most people, that, you know, corporations should be regulated. We are in agreement that, I don't know, you may have different views on guns, but we're in agreement that background checks are a good thing. We cannot pass legislation, you know, on relatively simple things. So I think that the a good chunk of this is they also have made it very easy for the government to be inefficient and for people to think that, the inefficiency of the government requires less government rather than a more efficient government that works for them.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, it goes back to the old Jay Gould quote. Whether he said it or not, it's accurate. I could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half, and they're not even paying anymore. We're just doing it to ourselves. But, Mateus, I appreciate you taking time for us. As always, enlightening and educational. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. My pleasure. It's educational for me.
My good friend, Mateus Vernango. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Like me, are you concerned? Concerned that we're returning to the days of company towns and maybe digital currency is our future? I want to hear it. rick@therickssmithshow.com. Right back.
We're airing a game right now, but stay here on the stream for more civic media news, talk, and more. Civic Media is your spot for sports. From updates on your favorite teams, live broadcasts of the Packers, Badgers, Brewers, and Bucks, and local sports coverage in your community, we've got everything you need. Find a station near you at civicmedia.us or download the free app today. We'll have more news and talk coming up here on Civic Media's stream.
I used to smoke. I thought of cigarettes as my best friend.
They were always there for me when I needed a break.
I also thought cigarettes were my best friend. And then they gave me peripheral artery disease.
I smoked and had a stroke. Actually, multiple strokes.
I smoked and have heart disease.
Here's my tip. If cigarettes are your friend, you need a better friend.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So every day, just about, I go, why is anyone surprised? Every day I look at the news and there's the shocking headlines of, can you believe this? And you go, yeah, with this administration, I can believe anything. So when we found out that Trump wanted to name the gaudy ballroom after himself, I'm like, what did you think he was going to name it? Did you really think he was going to name it the Barack Obama Ballroom? No. Or the Joe Biden Honorary Ballroom? No, it was always going to be Trump. Because Trump only knows one thing, and that's Trump. So for all those people who feigned outrage, or really just were dumb enough to be outraged, oh, please, just stop. And here to share some thoughts on the outrage of the weekend, I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
How the heck are you, Rick?
Not surprised, clearly. I mean, come on, come walk with me on this. Given what we've been living through the last several months, this is the most minor thing he has done. And to see the kind of ridiculous outrage, I'm just like, either it's feigned or you're just stupid.
I think it's more the metaphor of it, right? Like it's not just the action of I'm tearing down the White House. It's the metaphor of he's tearing apart the White House, right? Like it's not about what it's really about. And so I think the idea that he's going to name it, you know, after himself makes complete sense because he names everything after himself. But then again, I think it'll be the one thing that it will be easy for a Democrat to completely tear down whenever they get into office. And I would say,
I'm all in favor of that. I said the other day on social media, the first person who comes out and says that they're going to tear it down gets my vote. And there's precedence for this. Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the White House. Ronald Reagan ripped them off.
Exactly. Well, I think Trump is a good example for this because Donald Trump doesn't have approval for any of this. There's no permits. There was no asbestos testing done. There's nothing that has been approved by the commission. There's the commission for White House historic stuff, and there's the Historic Preservation Society that's a congressional
blah 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 blah. Trump's a get her done guy,
right? So it makes complete and total sense that whatever Donald Trump does, some Democrat could then come in and just completely change it. They could also come in and change the room to some extent and rename it. You know, the Barack Obama's ballroom is bigger ballroom, you know, or something that would really trigger Trump to troll him.
I did have a listener, you know, come up with an interesting. He said, don't tear it down. Convert it into a homeless shelter and soup kitchen. And I'm like,
yes,
yeah, that, and then put Trump's name on it. Then I think I'd be okay with it a little bit, maybe. But no, for me, the ballroom is about more than just a ballroom. It's about changing, the sanctity of that property, of changing, of this being that thing going and in our face with, as you pointed out, without any approval whatsoever, changing the face of this country. Not just a building, not just, oh, we'd like to have a little party center to hold weddings for Jeff Bezos's kids or whatever. But this is about really changing this country to be more like Vladimir Putin's or one of those authoritarian types. My thought, curious yours.
No, I completely agree with you. I think this is, it's taking a bulldozer to the White House, but it's also taking a bulldozer to the country. The White House is such a huge symbol of democracy and of America. Like, it's the most famous building in America. And so the fact that he has been so easily willing to just completely eviscerate it and tear it apart, it really just goes in keeping with who he is as president and who he will continue to be for the next few years.
And the bigger part of this for me as a union guy, the obvious... they're doing it with non-union labor. They're not even doing it with union labor. This could be a way for Trump to go, hey, look, I'm on the side of working people, a way to get the building trades on board with him. They are ticked because, look, there are a lot of Republicans, a lot of building trades Republicans. And this message of, you know, basically up yours, quite interesting.
It's so predictable, though. I mean, it's so in keeping with who Donald Trump is. And, it was all a lip service. We all knew it was. Like, you and I talked so much about this being through the 24 election, where we're like, he's full of crap. He's saying exactly what you want to hear under this guise of I'm going to do everything for you. And, now it's not just labor guys that are dealing with being lied to. It's farmers, it's ranchers, like, a lot of people in the Trump coalition are experiencing, you know, some of the I don't really care itis that Trump has about people. He wants what he wants and he's going to do what he wants. And if that hurts your life, then sucks to be you.
Yep, it's all about
Trump. For the rest of us, all we can do is just sit there and be like, we tried to tell you, like, I don't know what to do here. Cause we tried to tell you. Maybe next time you'll believe us. Maybe.
And again, I look at this as going to be another one of these giant sinkhole kind of things where started off, first number I saw was 200 million. I'm now seeing 250 to 300 million. I'm seeing some cost overruns. And again, this is supposed to be with non-union labor because those union workers are way too expensive. And, you know, I don't even know what the argument is anymore because it's so ridiculous. But what I'm told is no tax dollar is going to go into it. And I got to tell you, I'll believe that when I see it. And I know we're going to be on the hook for it, which is why I think Trump is trying to shake down the DOJ for $230 million.
I think that's exactly true. So I guess in the summer he had said 200,000. Last week he said 250. On Thursday he said 300. And then by Friday, they were giving estimates of 350. I guarantee you by the end of this, we're going to talk about it being like $1 billion and nobody's going to know where that money went.
Yeah, I mean, and will it even get done? Will it ever be done?
That's a good question. It might be just because he wants to have it, you know, be his and probably break a bottle of champagne over it or whatever you do.
So we can put his name on it. But the shakedown thing. I mean, MAGA's got to be unhappy with this as well, because it's their tax dollars, too, that he's trying to get his hands into their pockets.
Yeah. And so this idea of it's going to be $250,000 we're going to spend on this
million.
Thing. Or $250 million on this thing. Oh, whoops. I also need $230 million from the DOJ to compensate me for all of this other stuff. And I mean, we talked to a couple of senators last week who were still in Washington, bless them for it. And even the Republicans were kind of like, I think the only person that I talked to who was totally fine with it was Tommy Tuberville, said, well, it's already Trump's money.
It is.
And I was just like,
I agree with the dumbest man in the U.S. Senate. I actually am in total agreement with the dumbest man in the U.S. Senate because, well, Trump is now king. He's now the president, and according to him, Speaker of the House, and as Speaker of the House, controls the purse.
Right. That's the thing that he said over the weekend, is that I guess there's a story about Trump making fun of Mike Johnson as the Speaker and saying, you know, really, I am the Speaker and the President because I control everything that Mike Johnson does. He's my puppet. And I always kind of thought that Donald Trump was Stephen Miller's puppet as the president, just because it seems like Trump doesn't really know what's going on half the time. And, you know, Stephen Miller then gets on camera and contradicts everything that Trump said and be like, no, we're doing what I want to do.
And bringing up Stephen Miller, because, you know, interesting thing here recently with Stephen Miller, with the question about, are we going to be sending troops on the ground to Venezuela? And his answer wasn't no.
His answer wasn't no. Like, you would think that would be the first thing that you would say, is somebody be like, are we going to put boots on the ground? He'd be like, no. Like, that's not who we are as Americans. We're not going to invade another country just because we have nothing better to do. And Donald Trump's poll numbers are in the toilet. But he didn't say no. And so now they're sending the USS Gerald Ford into the Caribbean. Yeah. I mean, it's probably getting close to there by now. It had to come from Croatia or something. I don't know. It came from Europe, essentially. And so we're going to have like one of the biggest aircraft carriers in the world sitting in the Caribbean. And he's just going to keep blowing up planes that, you know, people are saying that was my brother wasn't a drug runner. He was a fisherman.
And fishing boats. Yeah.
So, the thing is too, like he keeps, one of the things that Rand Paul of all people has been saying, cause Rand Paul's an actual libertarian guy. Like, he really does believe that libertarian, you know, our country only and nobody else. Rand Paul said, it's weird because Trump keeps saying that this fentanyl is coming in from Venezuela. It's like, no, man, like none of the fentanyl that's coming into the United States is coming from Venezuela. It's coming from China. But there's a bunch of Don Jr.'s cocaine that's probably coming in from Venezuela. Allegedly.
Maybe they got their own domestic stash. But, you know, this is the weird thing, because you bring this up. You know, Lindsey Graham was on Face the Nation, and he was cheerleading. He was all in favor. We're going to go bombing this stuff and the narco-terrorists. And look, I'm in favor of stopping this stuff coming into the country as well. But Lindsey Graham did bump into something that made me go, wait a second. You're bombing boats, which I don't know the legality of all this. I don't know if we're into now the kind of criminal territory that is going to make Trump and our government, well, on the wrong side of history in a big way. But Lindsey Graham, when pushed back about the buyers, because the host asked, you know, well, there's a lot of people who want this stuff. He goes, well, we're coming after them, too. And I'm like, you know, you're gonna put gunboats in Lake Erie, or what are we talking about? We're coming after them how? Because now it seems to me everything is on the table. We've got masked soldiers running around in our streets. Are we gonna start kicking in people's houses to make sure they're not taking drugs? I don't know how far this goes.
I don't think any of us knows. And that's sort of the scary piece of it is I feel like every week we look at, you know, oh, legally you can't do this, and then Trump does it. And so over and over again, we have proven that Trump doesn't really care about the law. He's going to do whatever the heck he wants. And, you know, everybody else be damned. And when it goes to the Supreme Court's already given him this complete immunity for doing whatever he wants. So, I mean, what are they going to do?
Especially if you couch it in the terms of national security, which is, you know, what they're arguing. Well, we're just keeping Americans safe by blowing up these fishing boats. And look, there may be some drugs on those boats. I'm not saying there's not, but there might not be. And there's some real interesting war criminal kind of stuff that you got to, because I don't know that he's got the okay from Congress. I'm not quite, you know, when I was in school, the only people who could declare war was Congress. I may have missed something in the interim, but I'm sure that this isn't something that we voted on.
Exactly. That's the other piece of this, is that it's very much not a congressionally approved war. But again, the Supreme Court has given him the green light to do whatever he wants without any kind of accountability. And so here we are again. It's more a matter of, you know, ask for forgiveness rather than permission.
Imagine if Nancy Reagan, during the whole war on drugs, was advocating, you know, gunboat diplomacy and blowing Mexico.
Yeah.
I wonder, how would conservatives react? Because here's the reality. In my world, when I've spoken to people about this, most people are okay with blowing up those boats. And I got to be honest, I'm not entirely opposed to the idea, because I don't want that garbage coming into the country. But again, I think there's a system in which that should happen. There's the way the rule of law works. There's the way our institutions work that maybe we should follow, instead of we're just going to blow up whatever we want. And I don't know. I wouldn't want Obama to have that power, and I don't want Trump to have that power.
Yes, absolutely. One of the boats, two people survived from the boat, and they repatriated those people to the country. And it was one of those things where I sort of sat back and was like, wait a minute, if these people aren't criminals and you're repatriating them back to their own country and you're not arresting them for being drug runners or whatever it is your allegation was, then why did we blow up their boat?
Yeah.
And,
well,
we didn't bring
them back to this country because they'd have rights to stand trial.
Yeah, no, we sent them back to Venezuela or Colombia or whatever, wherever they came from. And the other thing too that I keep hearing folks say is it's such a huge amount of distance than people fully understand. You're talking about a boat that is not in the middle of the Caribbean, because it wouldn't have the gas to be able to do it. Like, you would need, who was it? I think it was maybe Adam Schiff who said you would need to stop 20 times to fill up on gas, you know, between Venezuela and Florida.
Yeah. But again, it's not about the issue, Sarah. And this is what I've learned about conservatives now. It's about the bigger picture. It's not about the facts. None of that matters. He's doing something about drugs. You know, for instance, perfect example. The narrative is grocery prices are falling. The narrative is inflation's dead. Yet, as the guy who does the grocery shopping in my house, I will be the first to tell you prices have not fallen a bit. In fact, they are still going up. So don't leak on me and tell me it's raining when I know you're leaking on me.
Yeah. So one of the things we found out on Friday is that the consumer price index numbers came out last month. It was like a 1.6% increase in total increase in grocery cost. This month it's something like 0.3%. So it's still going up. It went up really bad last month. I mean, things were really, really bad last month. And so you would think that would, you know, plateau at some point maybe, but no, that's not happening. It still went up, you know, another 0.3%. And now we're going into the holidays. And so folks are going to try and start buying Christmas presents and buying food for big dinners. And
yep.
So we're all going to be feeling it.
Oh, look, I bought eggs. They're not a buck a dozen.
Yeah.
I put gas in the truck. It's definitely not a buck a gallon. I just paid my car insurance. It hasn't come in. It hasn't come down. So all the stuff he was going to do on day one hasn't done. Whole bunch of stuff that he claimed he wasn't going to do that was in Project 2025. He's done. At what point do my Red Hat MAGA folks realize that they've been duped? That this is all a screw job and they've been conned? Or does that ever happen? And understand, look, I have conversations with a lot of MAGA folks. They're fives. You're never going to convince them. I keep them around just to hear them spew. They're beyond help. But I talk to them because I do think I need to know how they think. And I don't understand how they're not outraged.
I agree. And I'm starting to see some MAGA outrage, especially when you talk about Argentina. We were going to give a $20 billion bailout to Argentina. Now it turns out it's $40 million
billion.
That we're sending to Argentina.
Billion.
Billion. Billion dollars. Billion with a B. And now we're also going to start importing their beef at a time when our ranchers are suffering their own problems.
Yeah. You got to ask.
The soybean.
How much kickback? How much kickbacks going back to the Trump organization to the kids? How much payoff?
Exactly. And I think, again, like I think there's a third of people who you're never going to get. Yep. I think those are the hardcore MAGA fives. And then there are the coalition people who voted for him, who got him elected, who are, you know, maybe independents who are just like, I don't know. And I think those folks are the ones who are gonna, you know, leave the Republican Party, because they're like, not only did the president screw us, but you in Congress are not stepping in to help any of us.
Yeah, no. But here's the thing: Steve Bannon has said it, so mark it down on the calendar. Trump is going to win in 2028. He's going to be president for four more years. He's going to be a three-termer. You just watch.
You know, I feel like every single time we talk about things like this, it's like, well, that's illegal. You can never do it. And then Trump does it.
Yep.
So again, what would happen? Was the Supreme Court step in and say somehow you don't have immunity anymore?
Well, he's already Speaker of the House. So, you know,
yeah,
we could go that route too.
I mean, that's the thing, is he can, the way that the law is written is you can't be elected. So he could be appointed. He could be, you know, installed. By somebody else, as long as he's not on the ballot.
There you go.
Then
look, I'm sure there are smart people figuring out how to do this as we speak. Just is what it is. Sarah, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Rawstory.com. That's where you go to check out Sarah Burris's work. Sarah, thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Have a great rest of the week.
You as well, our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts. Third term? You think it's possible? Last year, I would have said impossible. I'm not on the impossible bandwagon anymore. Because like Sarah just said, you know, they say he can't do it because it's illegal. He does it, and there's no one to hold him accountable. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1948. That was the day that a thick yellow fog rolled over the town of Denora, Pennsylvania, just south of Pittsburgh. Denora was a mill town nestled in a valley on the banks of the Monongahela River. By 1948, the town had grown to 14,000 people who came to work in the town's steel mills and the Denora Zinc Works. For years, the local residents had complained about the pollution that spilled from the plants. Smog was a regular occurrence, but this fog was even worse than usual. A layer of cold air was trapping a noxious blend of nitrogen dioxide, sulfuric acid, and fluoride pollution. 24 hours passed, and still the fog grew denser. The police and local doctors began to receive reports of people having difficulty breathing. The fog had become so thick that residents could not see to drive. For 5 days, the smog hung over the town until a rain began to break it up. Nearly half of the town's residents became ill. 20 died. U.S. Steel refused to take blame for the fog, even though they continued to run the plant as the deadly toxins continued to build. According to a 2010 article by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, despite the efforts of industry to cast the tragedy as an act of God, the fatalities in Denora received national attention. The event changed the way air pollution was viewed, moving it rapidly from an aesthetic issue to a public health concern, and spurred local, state, and federal officials to control toxic air pollution. In 2008, a smog museum opened with the motto, "Clean Air Starts Here." Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
And that's the thing. Look, you know, Sarah's not wrong. You know, it's a constant barrage of insanity coming out of this administration. And look, Trump's second term has become a relentless parade of corruption, cruelty, and what has become unchecked power. That is leaving the working class. And look, average everyday Americans, well, screwed. We see Trump handing out pardons to his billionaire buddies, shoveling contracts to his cronies, and cutting vital subsidies while staging gold-plated spectacles for the ultra-rich. You know, what more could you expect out of this administration? And sadly, all we see out of Democrats are, well, powerless theatrics. While Republicans... Republicans are bending over backwards doing gymnastics to rationalize every new outrage. And this idea that they ever had a moral compass, I guess that's now off the table. Look, anyone who believed that they were the party of religiosity or moral virtue, please cut me a break. They are now full on the table who they are and who they've always been. And the sad reality is grocery prices continue to go up. Healthcare costs are skyrocketing. Job insecurity is at an all-time high. And oh, by the way, you working class people, you're just going to have to work harder and harder. Because, you know, that blue collar boom that Trump told you might come your way. Well, that ain't going to happen. And that's the sad reality of the world that we find ourselves. His administration has basically normalized evil. They're fostering indifference to the constant and daily barrage of abuses. And we've transformed corruption into, well, just mere background noise that sadly most people have completely tuned out. And the danger in that is the erosion of outrage over things that actually matter. There's tons of outrage. I get the MAGA folks always got something to be mad about. And I, as I tell them, I'm angry about things too, just not that. I really don't care where someone goes to the bathroom. But with that comes the loss of hope. And I do get a lot of people say, Rick, can't you just admit it? We're doomed. Can't you just admit it? It's over. No. No, because I believe in us. I believe in we the people. I believe that eventually we shake awake, but they're going to have to go further. And I've been saying this all along. The solutions to our problems will come because of the suffering due to their cruelty. They're cruel. That's the point. And only when we've suffered enough will we rise up. But the sad reality is what we're seeing right now is a steady acceptance of a political con that leaves us all worse off. Except for the billionaire class and Trump's inner circle. They're going to be aces. Don't worry about them. They will be fine. And the sad reality is we are living in a moment where Trump's corruption and self-serving excess aren't being called out. And average everyday working people are suffering and are going to suffer enormously because of it. And the sad reality is both political parties have some to blame. The Republicans a whole lot more. And understand, you know, as we allow this kind of indifference, which is the biggest danger of all, to allow this public indifference to evil to become normal, this is what scares me the most. So for everyone who sent me emails going, come on, Rick, you know, it's over. Nope. Not going there, not buying it. We need to be fighting back, standing up, organizing, and moving forward. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something I said made you think, made you angry, made you happy, made you sad. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is Civic Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska, sports director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clemens, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their communities dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.